Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. Selena Rezvani is the author of a new book, The Next Generation of Women Leaders. She's a speaker and consultant specializing in women and the workplace. She has spoken at Harvard, Princeton, Carnegie Mellon, University of Pennsylvania, Comcast, Apple, and many others. Her commentary and advice have been sought by The Washington Post, The Wall Street Journal, Forbes, CareerBuilder, ABC Television, NBC Television, and she's going to have an ongoing commentator role in NPR's 51% The Women's Perspective. Her overall goal is to propel more women into the top echelons of businesses. Selena, welcome to Edgewise.
Dave, thanks so much for the invitation.
Selena, when you say next generation of women leaders, what are you talking about?
I'm really talking about Generation X and Y women. Those women who are in the first half of their careers and who could benefit from the lessons and hardest won advice of women who've already achieved top executive status. And this generation is pretty interesting because women are graduating with the majority of advanced degrees and bachelor's degrees. So we have no lack of a viable, well-credentialed talent pool. And some interesting research is out there showing that women of these generations have an equal hunger for jobs with a lot of responsibility, a hunger to go out there and grab the leadership reins and learn from women who might have learned the hard way how to succeed.
With more women leaders than ever to look up to, why do you think your new book is relevant today?
There's a misconception out there that because women are about half the workforce now, we've achieved parity or everything we need to in the workplace. The truth is, the numbers still say it all when you look at actual leadership positions. The Fortune 500, 3% of those CEOs are women. That number is awfully close to zero.
Right.
15% of Fortune 500 boards are women.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not growing at the pace we've expected when it comes to more gender balance at the top. Yes, women are in the workforce, but not in those critical decision-making seats.
What about outside North America, outside the United States? We're underneath our own dome here of cultural awareness. What is happening outside? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Norway is probably the most notable country, and same with France. Both have implemented quotas, a touchy subject when it comes to gender and the workplace. But Norway has seen a lot of positives come out of this. They've seen improved financials, and it's working well for them. France has just made the decision to do it because they have an issue with gender balance. In the U.S., it's not likely that that's going to happen, and it's not likely it's going to be government mandated. But some companies are putting out their thinly veiled metrics or targets for getting more women at the top.
Is it your opinion that this should be mandated?
You can call it a quota, or you can call it an initiative with real teeth in your organization. It doesn't have to be a quota, but it needs to be a strong enough initiative with executive support that's not just another HR group or affinity group.
But my point when I talk about quotas and whatnot, I'm talking about external to the company. The government steps in and says, you will hit these numbers, that type of thing.
I don't think that would mesh well with our culture. I don't think that would be embraced. I think there'd be a lot of backlash and resentment. I do think some of the most progressive companies can do this, and some already are doing it. Mm-hmm. If you look at Procter & Gamble, they tie executive compensation to executives' record of achievement promoting women. That's a real showing of commitment and support. Others are investing in really innovative tools like Xerox. They've made a hybrid of Match.com and social networking to connect mentors with mentees. So you don't even have to meet. You don't even have to be located in the same office. You can be matched with somebody, and that's women to women. So women are building the pipeline in that organization.
Hmm.
But it needs to have teeth. It needs to have executive support. Someone needs to be accountable for it. And you need metrics. It really helps when you show this.
Right.
The other group is the Big Four.
Mm-hmm.
They have been really innovative in terms of naming the problem of too few women at the top and really doing something about it. Interesting things.
Now, the list of women that you've interviewed is quite impressive. The former president of the Los Angeles Dodgers, the CEO of the Washington Post. How did you get to these women? Why did they agree to be interviewed?
I was an MBA student at Johns Hopkins when I came up with this idea that I'd love to compile research, do these interviews. I decided to reach out to these women the old-fashioned way. I wrote to them. I explained there's this hole in the leadership development literature. There's very few business books, leadership books targeted at Gen X, Gen Y women. And together we can fill this hole and do something about it. To my amazement, the vast majority of women I reached out to said, yes, I'd be interested in doing it. You can do the interview and excerpt, quote, for common learning.
Selena, my daughter has her eye on, at some point in time, some type of leadership position. If she were to come to you looking for coaching, what would you advise?
I'd say for somebody who's a newcomer to the work world, take 100% ownership of your career. It sounds like common sense, but it's not really common practice. And the reason for that is the school model teaches us, usually, if you work really hard for something, there'll be some reward at the end. In business, that doesn't work.
Yeah.
Good work is not enough to guarantee rewards. You need to also be an advocate and be really comfortable asking and negotiating on your own behalf. Those are the people that tend to move up, not just the competent ones, but the ones who ask, who say, here are my aspirations. They really make it known and share where they want to be with people and keep asking until they get there. We know from research, women negotiate about 4 times less than men.
Now, why is that? Is it just societal?
I think a large part of it is. In our rearing, we tend to talk and reinforce more to little boys about being brave, taking a risk, a little more of a risk orientation, going for it. With little girls, it tends to be more reinforcement about relationships, maintaining relationships. You were so nice to that little boy, or you shared. That was really nice.
Right.
We bring that into the workplace. As women, we see these conversations like asking for a raise as a confrontation. Linda Babcock out of Carnegie Mellon's done really, really neat research into this. She asked men and women to liken negotiation to an analogy. Men most often likened it to a wrestling match, and women most often likened it to a trip to the dentist.
Okay.
So if you think about that, a wrestling match, there's parity until somebody wins. It's strategic. A dentist's office, that's a passive thing that nobody likes.
Right.
So absolutely for the newcomer, invest early in negotiating. If you invest in that either through a coach or through training at the beginning of your career, you will call on those skills throughout the length of your career. It's a really worthy investment.
Now, you must have seen, and you probably see all the time, women who either aspire to leadership or who are in leadership positions making mistakes. Mm-hmm. What are some of those common mistakes?
One you'll notice next time you're in a meeting, if you look at how men and women talk, women tend to qualify their ideas or their opinions before sharing it. Examples that are pretty common are, this might be a silly idea. I'm sorry if somebody already asked this question. This might be off topic, but and the list goes on.
Right.
In a way, we're buffering the opinion we're about to give by saying, I'm not sure how good this is. The issue is in business, a lot of people will take you at face value. So if you're saying your ideas are silly, that's not how you want to introduce something.
Of course not.
A hallmark of a leader is to stand behind your ideas and your opinions that you're giving, knowing they're not going to be embraced every time. But you're okay with the risk. You know you'll bounce back.
Mm-hmm. The issue of personal branding enters into this conversation about women in leadership as well. Not too long ago, Tom Peters wrote any number of books on the subject of personal branding. Mm-hmm. How does that factor into the next generation of women leaders?
Branding is a big buzzword right now in management, but it's important because we can either passively approach branding, assuming my reputation is just going to happen to me. People are going to think what they think of me. There's not much I can do about it. Or take a much more proactive stance and sculpt it.
Exactly.
Carve out the brand you want. A great way to do that, and a really neat surprise in the book for me, was asking the question, what do you want your legacy to be? When you leave this job one day, how would you like to be remembered? If you can answer that question now, you'll be able to use it as a compass throughout your decision-making and your everyday work. You'll be able to ask, is what I'm doing today in line with the brand I want to create, the legacy I'd like to leave here? You can even ask it in the short term. When I leave the room, what is the buzz about me? How do they remember me?
Right.
It's not the easiest question. And yet the women I interviewed had this continuous improvement model. Mm-hmm. They were always asking themselves, how did that tough conversation go today? What could I learn from the project I ran and officially closed today? Not so they could hammer themselves over their weaknesses, but so many of them said, I do it so I can figure out what my signature strengths are. That's the core of your brand, mm-hmm. what you're most respected for.
When they think of you, they think of those three or four things you bring to
exactly.
a project or the work that you do.
Right.
Okay. An awful lot has been said and written about Generation Y. In particular, this whole issue of what some people might term job hopping. Mm-hmm. This is what Gen Y is about, whether they're men or they're women. They're in such a big hurry to learn and to keep learning because that was reinforced by their parents that a lot of them don't stay in their positions. And entry level really means nothing to them anymore. They're looking for meaningful work. And unless they're learning, they're really not going to make the commitment for the long haul.
Right.
What are your thoughts on that?
It's my opinion that what this generation requires, which is a ton of diversity in their work, and they're not having a huge attention span for a very prolonged time, overlaps nicely with what so many of the women I interviewed said. They all said, I took a career lattice approach, not a career ladder approach. So rather than just vertically moving up, I sometimes went sideways, I sometimes went diagonally, I sometimes went abroad. To season myself as a professional.
Right.
Many of them said the higher up you go, the more you hear the words visionary and strategic. And being more of a generalist helped those women get to top level roles. That you need to know enough to be dangerous to lead a company in some way. And you don't need to be the smartest technician in the room.
Right.
I think that's something that might appeal to mm-hmm. Gen Yers, men or women, because they can do that. They can broaden themselves. The key is make sure there's some common thread. You need to paint that common thread in your resume or for an employer. A common thread might not be industry. It might not be role. Maybe it's that you have project management skills. You've always used those in every job and they're terrific and broad. But it's your job to really create that common thread so you're not leaving it to the HR person to come up with.
Right. So last question I have to wrap up is, what can you tell male managers to make them more aware of the challenges that women on management track or a leadership track face right now? What can they do?
A huge one is we tend to see a lot of women get stuck in support roles, particularly if somebody coming out of school, they are usually low in confidence because they don't have a lot of leverage. They don't have a lot of weight they can throw around in the workplace. They have a newly minted degree and not much experience. So an important thing is if someone needs to serve in a support role, steer them out of it. The longest you should be in a support role is a year. If you love that world, great. But if you have bigger goals and want to be other places, if you stay longer than a year, you're going to have explaining to do.
Got it.
A critical thing you can do is talk to young women or women in general about possibilities, about where they want to go, not limits. There's so many people that think within limits. So really getting them to think big about their careers. What would you do if you could have any job in the world? What level would you want to be in? Mm-hmm. So I think just good old coaching is an important competency to use. Outside of that, I would keep in mind some bias that's out there from men and women.
Right.
When we look at study after study, when men and women have equal resumes and show an equal level of ambition, both men and women tend to interpret a woman doing that as a little more aggressive. It's off-putting in some way, whereas we see the man as assertive and ambitious. Positive variations on those words. We're not yet at a point, according to the White House project, where 100% of Americans are comfortable with a woman in charge. Mm-hmm. But those barriers are continuing to break down. And certainly we've come a long way to just be cognizant of these things and open to women at all levels of an organization.
We've been speaking to Selena Rezvani, author of the book, The Next Generation of Women Leaders. Selena, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you so much, Dave.
The American Management Association has an international presence, adding value to your organization by involving you in a global community of peers and practitioners via one of the world's most sophisticated knowledge exchange networks. Today, AMA's global reach extends from Management Center Europe in Brussels to Management Center de Mexico in Mexico City, from the Canadian Management Center in Toronto to AMA Japan in Tokyo. And since 1995, AMA has served the Chinese market through the Asia-Pacific Management Institute in Shanghai. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Gabe Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.